But yeah, anyway, like, yeah, if you request and you can't come up, it's because something's wrong with your connection or something. You have to try rebooting the app, start over again. Anyway, yeah, like for sure. I think some of these like true cypherpunk narratives, Zephyr brings me that vibe. The team is anonymous, which is great for a privacy system. You don't want an attack vector. You've got like a mined coin, so you got a proof of work collateral there. There's no smart contracts or anything else fancy. It's a really simple system. And you basically have an over-collateralized stablecoin within it. And what you can do, I don't know if you're aware about what it can do, but like basically you can swap from Zephyr to the ZSD over-collateralized stablecoin within your wallet without having to go to a centralized exchange or a DEX. So for example, if let's say Zephyr's price moons to $200 and I'm like, ooh, I want to take some off the table and go to stable, I can go to ZSD, which is the internal over-collateralized stable. And right now it's like 2,000% over-collateralized, so you can easily mint some. And as a convenience feature, without being able to sort of like quote-unquote trade this or convert this within your wallet without having to like show that anywhere in a public ledger, I think is a super, super interesting use case for the reasons that you can imagine one might use that. But anyway, yeah, it's I think definitely this has some merit.
I'd be pretty interested to see what happens. Like, let's say hypothetically, US dollar collapses because there's $2.1 quadrillion in derivatives that are balancing on a toothpick. If that were to theoretically occur, could you have something like Zephyr, be a replacement, in like we could start storing value in other ways to like maintain, like could it become like a, could it still maintain that unit of one and then start accepting other forms of value other than the dollar? Do you know what I mean? Because like if it's a stable coin, does it have to be stable towards the dollar, or could it be stable towards itself?
Yeah, no, ZSD is meant to be Oracle stabilized to what the arbitrage value is to an actual dollar, to peg it. So no, this system is not something sort of like to save the world or anything, for sure. Like, this is something that is it relies on the implication that people want something stable. To get a global stable coin requires global reach, and if we don't have the dollar as the world stable, what will happen is you'll have a lot of instability, because what will happen is if you have everyone using a little bit of Chinese dollar, you have someone using the European dollar and some people using the US, and if you don't have that network effect, then nobody will be stable at that point. Everything will be subject to a high degree of Forex risk in terms of doing business. So I don't think the dollar is going anywhere, no matter how much money we print. I think that's just like, the globe and its boundaries and its geography no longer has like new countries to form, et cetera. And all the lines are drawn, the battle lines or whatever. And network effect is all about just like printing as much money as possible to as many hands as possible. It's pretty much all it really is. And I think overthinking it and worrying about dollar collapse is like not really, like, it's not something I worry about. What I think will happen is ultimately the new hegemon on this planet becomes AI. So human beings and our money won't matter, because the number one consumer of everything on the planet, if we go in the current direction, will be AI machines. And as that occurs, AI will build its own currency. And that currency will be like, in my view, it'll be just thought itself, or just computation or information itself becomes the currency. Similar to how, like, hashing BTC or hash networks, you're basically paying for electricity and computation. That's the cost of the network, so to speak. I think when AI is using its, we can call them intellectual cycles instead of hashing, however you want to call it, there's going to be a value tied to the extremely powerful thought process of AI machines, which you're now seeing as you're paying for these things in services digitally. You're paying for, I don't know, a Netflix subscription, you're paying for a OpenAI subscription, you're paying for cloud services, et cetera, right? But ultimately, what will happen, I think, is you're going to just pay for the power of thought itself. to do your job, you're going to want AI to do that job for you. And it's going to cost a certain amount of money to get that AI to do that job for you. That cost will become increasingly lower and lower as these things become much more efficient and focused. But at the same time, like the ability to produce thought is the new hegemon on the planet. And I think like even Bitcoin doesn't survive that. I think nothing that we consider money today will survive when AI emerges as the dominant force on this planet. I think I'm fully convicted that that's the case, that like no money, no human money will matter at that point, because AI will have like an entire new base layer of computational money that will emerge to pay for those types of activities. And AI will pay AI with those things too. So for example, if you have AIs over here and they have to pay for AI services over there because of a job they need to get done or whatever, it'll just simply be just value transfer. And you won't even, hell, you may not even see the monetary system anymore. Like the base layer of the like AI monetary system may be in binary that nobody can read, which I think is increasingly probable. So I think that the risk right now, and I talked about this earlier before you came in, is that like human beings risk being like just the living in a zoo, where basically we actually give up sovereignty to machines, which we're doing every single day of our life. Every single tech company, every single country is working towards that goal of making us less sovereign. Like that is a fact. Like every single metric points to this. Like there is almost no metric that points in the other direction, that we're actually, that these systems are like increasing freedom versus you know, deepening the problem in some sense. So it's not to say that we won't get cool shit like cures for cancer and, you know, amazing new medicines and all the other fun stuff that AI brings. We're going to get that stuff. But I do think like the harms are, or I don't know about harms, that you'll just live in a different world. And the human beings that live like 100 years from now will just live in that world. They won't know what it was like to live in a world that we live in now. And that's just fine, I guess. But that's kind of my thinking of where things are going with the network effects of, and the way computational systems are being built today. Pretty interesting stuff though. Where crypto falls in all of this and all that, it's just all a big maybe. Like we have no idea. What we do know is that cryptographic decentralized systems, especially once you have like quantum encryption based techniques, like you have the basis for entirely new systems that never lived on this planet before. And to like make claims that like one crypto or the other is going to do well or safe or whatever the fuck else, like there's just no guarantee of any of that. In fact, really, like if you look at all crypto systems today, all of them have vectors for obsolescence, every single one. Like there's not a single one that doesn't necessarily have that baked in. And it's just the nature of software, I think, that it's like a Darwinian evolution that's taking place. And you'll have things that win, you'll have things that lose, you'll have things that survive, some things that don't, and things will get just bigger and bigger. And
there was a couple of things that kind of like I guess got forgotten early on. Like to your point, like BTC started out 32 as like a 32 bit infrastructure, and it was supposed to be able to scale like beyond that. It's supposed to become like, If you need it to be 64-bit, it could become 64-bit. If you need to be 256-bit or beyond that, it could keep scaling. And then the solution to all that, even beyond like, okay, well, we just need more complicated math, is you start building like quantum resistance for these wallets, right? And so you keep scaling up that. And so that was supposed to be a focus, and now it's just not even like a concept for the BTC crowd.
Of course, which is this is all true until like... you know, if quantum computers scale to be much, much smaller, then you just have an entirely different world at that point. Like I would point out, like the world when that happens will simply be unrecognizable as the human race we see today. So to make any claims about how we human beings even perceive money becomes almost like irrelevant. Like you're literally going to have AI babysitters taking care of children in the very near future. Like how people even perceive value and what they care about is not going to be anything like what we've seen in the history of human history so far. We're going to care about very different things because AI is going to be essentially our little babysitter, mother, brother, family member. And that changes who we are as a civilization and how human beings, like, it'd be no different than if an alien were to come land on this planet and start living with us. You're going to live with a very different civilization that you do now, depending on what that alien brings to the table. And that's what we're, I think we're about to see.
You know, that kind of challenges free will almost. It challenges free will because you're sitting there, you're thinking that you're doing something, you know, autonomously, but are you? Or were you influenced?
The neuroscience.
How many times do you need to be influenced for you to be out of control?
The neuroscience so far does not demonstrate that free will actually even exists. Free will is just something that feels like it exists, but like most of the experiments show that it does not anyway. Like your awareness of what you're thinking comes after you have thought it, but your decisions happen in the subconscious mind even before you're aware of it. So most things that you do on a moment-to-moment basis are not like you're not consciously doing. And this is why, like, I can't think a thought before I think a thought, and I can't predict a minute from now what's going to come out of my mouth any more than you can. Right. So like the free will is just basically a fantasy anyway. So this is the danger is that we have a world where the world feels free. That's the key. If you look at the Bill of Rights, you look at like how we sort of govern ourselves and everything else. We govern ourselves in a world where at least we can preserve the feeling of freedom. What you get with the machine state, though, is a sense that, like, you get a deepening sense that, wait a minute, I'm not actually free. The illusion of free will gets broken more and more. And as that happens, data so far suggests that people are vastly less happy when their free will illusion is broken, which is an interesting sort of, like, sociologic problem. So I think the reason why, like, you're going to see, like, increasing rates of depression and chaos in terms of human sociology is that the more exposure we have to the internet, the more slowly we feel less, we'll feel less and less in control of our own agency. And that can be for the better or worse. Like if AI knows how to manipulate us all to be like, you know, dopamine addicts and happy, we might get a happy society. I don't know. Like maybe our AI overlord will be good for us. The zookeeper that just takes care of us or some shit. I don't know. Like on the other hand, yeah, but the free will thing is, it's important to understand like the nature of neuroscience, because I can tell you this, the people that design these systems, like Facebook algorithms, TikTok algorithms, they understand that humans are highly manipulable. I mean, it's the nature of advertising. If free will was real, like the advertising wouldn't work. But we know it does.
Just imagine how bad this is going to be. You know, it's like the AI will know like 20 milliseconds or 200 milliseconds. What are you going to think? And then it's going to be like, yeah, look here, it's your advertisement, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, think about it. It's going to be able to, AI is going to be able to recognize every single facial movement you make. You know, you're going to be chatting with your little AI bot friend, and it understands you better than you understand yourself, right? Because it's watched you externally, and it can see all the different, it can understand the inflections in your voice. It can understand the nature of your, yeah, like when you're lying, when you're telling the truth, when you're upset with whatever. And especially AIs that have known you since you're a baby. I mean, shit, if you think your mother knows you, I can tell you something. I can tell you tales about how good it's going to understand you as a person. So you're going to have like deeply personal relationships with your sort of AI agents that are hanging out with you. And they're going to get to know you quite well. And most likely what will happen is your AI agent is going to chat with my AI agent. Our clones, and then kind of like, you know, make decisions. Like, you know, like it knows what I want to decide. Like, for example, if like my AI knows what I like to get at the grocery store, why in the fuck do I need to go to the grocery store? It could just go and order the shit for me, right? So you'll become increasingly reliant on devices that know you, and then you'll eventually become reliant on delegating those devices to talk to other people's devices that know them. Dating is a good example of something like that, where, you know, who's going to know you better, to arrange a marriage for you, your AI or some other person in your life, you know, like, so it's quite possible that your AI buddy will be like, oh, you need to marry this girl because she has all these features that you probably would like. And, you know, and that AI has already spoken to your AI, and there's like a little marriage match made based on the two machines. You'd like, yeah, we believe there's compatibility here based on data and human sociology data and all the other data from the network effect. So like, you're really going to fall in love with this girl. You're going
to. You need to rename
you're going to like her
in the space
eyes, or you're going to like her smile or some shit, right?
Sorry, I think I'm lagging. You need to rename the space dystopian sunset.
Dystopian worlds. Dystopian worlds, yeah. No, but there's a lot of dystopian problems happening. The most obvious one is the birth rate collapse. So the biggest world problem right now is not hyperinflation of the dollar or anything else. Right now, the biggest problem is just global population collapse in much of the industrialized world. It's an interesting problem.
Did you know that when Satoshi created BTC back then, it was actually in response to there was an official notice. I have it on my website. I forget what it was called, but it's like a government notice that was basically sent out, like warning of like a huge derivatives collapse. So it was 2.1 quadrillion at the time. It's bigger now, but that's basically the amount of dollar derivatives that exist on Earth that at some point need to be cashed in by someone, right? So something has to spark that. And so there's 2.1 quadrillion sats that exist, right? And so I was thinking, like, my theory on this is that BTC was created it was created for initially to kind of like absorb all this, but we went in two different directions. I think both directions are actually necessary. BTC is going to be the thing that pops the derivatives bubble. So this new upcoming ETF, I think it's more about getting everyone excited. We're going to run up to Wall Street. We're going to enter the group of derivatives, right? Because they're going to be like digital gold, right? They're a little derivative themselves. And then everyone gets really excited. And then, well, what happens on Wall Street is you get dumped on. And especially when you're in a very liquid state, because 99% are hodling, you're going to get dumped on brutally. And then people are going to see how ridiculously profitable that was. Then people are going to start dumping all their derivatives. That can't happen right now. Like, really can't happen right now. If it does, and everyone starts dumping all their derivatives, then you have successfully
popped the derivative bubble. A simple way to describe this is you can wind up having a nice Bitcoin, but then the petro-agrochemical state dies, and then now you're starved to death.
So TradFi
collapses. The dystopian Bitcoin world, if you have TradFi collapse, everybody is absolutely fucked. You have like a basic mass population die-off. Like, so you really cannot break the petro-agro dollar system right now.
You shouldn't, but it's going to happen. Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, it's unfortunate.
And you have to be, but you also have to be comfortable then that you just kill a lot of people. And that's fine.
It's not killing people. The US dollar is killing people every freaking day. BTC doing any good for anyone.
No. Hold up a second. This is incorrect. The network effect of the dollar plus the inventions of the West that have come from the like inflationary system have resulted in like the least amount of starvation in the history of the human race. Like, we really literally have some of the best lifespans in the history of all time, right? Like, truly of all time. So one is, you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. The reality is that a lot of things are built on sort of like the Western world and our ideas, and the dollar is the sort of like the hegemonic representation of that. Which, if you get the sort of like the petro-agro derivatives deterioration situation, by the way, that will affect the population and the monetary systems of every country on the planet. It doesn't necessarily make Bitcoin moon. It just makes a lot of people starve. Like, you know, so like, I know this stuff pretty deeply because like,
I understand that. And I agree.
National security implications.
I don't want, like, I'm saying BTC dies. I'm saying BTC is the sacrificial lamb. And then what you have is crypto as a whole, not just BCH or not just this or that. We all step in the transitional period, because I don't think the crash is going to be this like, you know, catastrophic thing. The way that we think. I think that banks are going to handle it in the way that they normally do, because they're all interconnected. So you're going to have a CBDC rollout as the quote unquote solution, but everyone's accounts are going to be locked temporarily. And then basically everyone will have a choice. Either you can go into their new system that doesn't work, that will have the same problems as the old system, because they're going to continue down the same path, but just maybe on a central blockchain thing. Or you can go and choose one of our options, and hopefully we're there during the panic so that people can get onto something that doesn't rob them as they've been robbed over the last 100 years. You know what I mean? Because I don't think, like, when I say collapse, I don't necessarily mean like, we're running around and, you know, people are dying and stuff. It's more like, no, like the banks shut their doors today and they're going to tell you on Monday that there's a new.
Yeah, but like the number of people that actually die, you don't actually see. But like wars are not where people get the, like, have the most death. It's not actually the wars that do that. It's actually just the more general sort of like global economic deteriorations that achieve that sort of endpoint. Now, you could argue that, like, you know, debasing the dollar too severely, you know, you're putting kind of a global economy at risk, and, you know, you're doing so at the benefit of, like, you know, getting us all colonoscopies and healthcare and whatever. I think the most obvious immediate outcome in the United States would be some kind of situation where it's forced austerity, where everyone loses all their benefits. Elderly people lose their benefits. You get a lot of mass poverty among the sort of like elderly. You get it among like healthcare and stuff. But like the, you know, and then the dollar is fine again, right? So there's no like, it's there is a solution to that, and that is that Americans lose everything they're used to having as a result. But that's not necessarily as bad as like a global dollar collapse, which would actually kill a lot of people for sure, because starvation is a good way to kill you. If you have a dramatic currency shift all over the planet, that's usually the bad outcome that happens. The network effect of the petro-agro sort of like chemical dollar system is we create a lot of fertilizer and we create a lot of like network effects that results in relatively cheap energy, relatively cheap food all over the world. And if you break that system, then, you know, like you can have like mass die-offs of billions and stuff. It's no joke. Like the amount, you know, how many calories of petrochemicals go into your body every day compared to like, you know, so to run the population as it works today, something like 9 out of 10 of your calories come from petrochemicals today. Think about that. So you cannot run a 6 billion population planet that easily on like, I don't know, farming in your little greenhouse or whatever. That's just not going to work. That's not scalable. You can't just go hunt in the forest for deer and then everyone's going to be fine. You have to have a gigantic agriculture system to that's how we got population on the planet to be like it is. So I think the broader like context for monetary policy tends to be things like, can you actually maintain a world that you like to live in? Is a much bigger problem than, say, for example, do I have a store of value or don't I, and all this other shenanigans. Like, you know, like people like, I think Bitcoiners get very deeply like stuck on this, but like store of value today, we have a store of value in the form of, say, gold. And right now that commands what, I don't know what the market cap is, 12 trillion, 13 trillion, whatever it is. I think it's been said that like the store of value function of an asset, if you can't use it as a routine currency, and Bitcoin clearly can't be used as a routine currency, if you used it as a like store of value function, then the store of value function, we know that gold has about a $12 trillion function. So if BTC had a similar like level of market cap to gold, I think that's a pretty good start. But if you talk about the entire derivatives market, like you mentioned, then you have to have a gigantic labyrinth of smart contract markets and stuff, which I think is a much, much larger market than, say, the store of value function, right? Because you have many trillions. You have like maybe 400 plus trillion in the derivatives market, whatever that number even is, who the fuck knows, like honestly, in the dollar derivatives market. And then you have the gold function, which is only a, you know, 10 to 20 trillion like size market. So the store of value, human rate is already quadrillion. What's that?
2.1 quadrillion about 10 years ago was the derivatives market.
Yeah, I don't know what the total currency on float is, M123. In total, I don't even know.
They try to hide it. They scrub the internet every once in a while, but I have the actual documentation on my site if you want to check it.
Any of it's, whatever the number is, it's some magic number that's not verifiable anyway, so it doesn't really matter. the point is, like, yeah, there is, the human beings have clearly demonstrated that store of value is not what they care about.
Well, it's, like, it is a Stanford University document. It is verified.
Yeah. But all of this is irrelevant. The point is, human race loves derivatives. Just memorize that fact. Because if you look at the market cap of the derivatives, it just shows you that that's what human beings care about. I don't think, unless we change on a genetic fundamental level, people are going to then suddenly care about, the whole world's going to move to a store of value narrative. I don't think so. Because the reason is, for the reasons you mentioned, store of value assets are not built for velocity. Like, that's not the reason they're built. They're built for the store of value function. And you don't get...
No, I just think you build a good product, right? And we all build products, and we come in together and just serve as a better solution to walk away from the CBDC that they're going to offer. That's basically
that's kind of what we've been saying about, like, the Zephyr idea is that basically it represents, like, one alternative to a place to, you know, put one's value if you wanted to. And I see crypto as, like, there's going to be tens of thousands of blockchains. In fact, Cosmos allows you to spin up a blockchain right now in about an hour. You could have your own blockchain in about an hour if you're quick at it. So we have, like, open source blockchain software in the form of, like, the Tendermint SDK and the, you know, the Cosmos blockchain infrastructure. Anybody can build a blockchain, a company, you personally. I mean, you'd have to have a reason why validators would want to validate that blockchain, of course. And, you know, they would probably do so if they felt you had a profitable product to build. But, like, my vision for the future is infinite blockchains, infinite decentralization is going to happen whether you like it or not. And there is zero way for sort of BTC to be, say, for example, the only blockchain. It's actually, you know, patently impossible. And what you'll have is lots and lots of stores of value in lots and lots of places with different niche communities doing whatever the fuck they want. And that's the counter to centralized systems. And when centralized systems are built, they have to contend with the fact that decentralized systems can't be shut down. So, for example, a good example of this would be, like, okay, BitTorrent made it really, really easy to pirate movies. And what ended up happening? You know, the streaming industry was built, right? And it became a subscription model after a while. And now you go to Disney and Netflix or whatever, and you buy your subscription and you watch it. Because before, like, the Blockbuster model was destroyed, the video store model was destroyed, of course, by the fact that you could stream and pirate a movie. And now they had to make movies, like, affordable. And the entire industry changed because the tech both facilitated streaming and it facilitated piracy simultaneously. And now we live in a new equilibrium. Will that equilibrium last? I don't know. Like, now that AI is going to be able to make movies, shit, like, you could probably, like, you'll be able to, like, give, like, a 2-sentence, a story about what you want to see as far as, like, a future TV series, and the AI is going to print you, like, 20 seasons of some show. So I think, like, so that's going to really, really take down Hollywood and really affect, like, the traditional industry. The same thing is true of blockchains. Like, the more of them there are and the more people that use them for different purposes, like, even the nature of money changes, because if you have so many different types of money that a person uses on a regular basis, it changes the value proposition for why you'd want to have, like, a central currency at all, right? Because if each of us paid us, if we had Netflix bucks, we had, like, you know, United Airlines, you know, frequent flyer miles and all these other little funny little, like, surrogate money things that we have, eventually, like, those pick up more and more steam. And you wind up with, like, more decentralized money systems. So, yeah, how the world's going to look as all these things evolve is really difficult to say. But, like, and you, on top of that, you have very many, many advanced technologies coming, which are quantum computing. You know, people are working on fusion. People are working on all sorts of interesting advanced materials. You got Neuralink working on connecting biological tissue to electronic tissue, and, you know, and stuff like this. So, just so many different, like, shifts besides AI and everything else happening, that you're really going to wind up with a very difficult to predict future. I think right now, for the next couple of years, you know, if we get, like, a bullish market in crypto, you have a few narratives that probably will, like, pump your bags, you know, to some extent, which is, like, why people are thinking about this stuff. They just want number to go up, and I agree. Like, I'd rather have a bag that goes up and stays stable.
There's another thing that I think is going to change over time is people are going to realize that the what they really want is purchasing power. When people actually understand that concept, because right now they don't understand. Everyone thinks that a unit of one is a unit of one is a unit of one, but that doesn't make any sense. We've actually had the dollar crashing for the last 100 years since it was conceived. It's about 26x less than what it was.
But I would point out this, like, I would point out that like 80% of the human race has terrible math skills. Yeah. So the reality is that the idea that the people are going to realize this is never going to happen.
Well,
not within like the current IQ standard of the human race right now.
No, it's right. Unfortunate. I hope that at some point people realize, right?
But they won't.
If okay,
no, I deal with 100,000 people, right? So like, nobody's going to realize shit. The human race is largely stupid. We're basically.
No, it's going to realize shit.
No, we just came out of the monkey drawer just like 5 minutes ago. Like in the history of evolution, we are but a speck. We are nothing in the grand scheme of things. Like, and we have been here for just a moment. Like we can be wiped out by some random solar event. It's just not even like, so the way you have to think about this is the human race is still very early in our sort of cognitive curve. Like when we talk about the midwit, the dimwit, and the whatever, the right curve, the left curve, and all that, this is all just basically just simple truth. Most people will simply not understand the nature of, most people have no idea how nuclear power works. Most people don't know how electricity is produced. And I would say most, probably over 90% of people could not explain to you how, you know, an electric generation works. So the idea that they understand,
and,
like...
And in the beginning, freaking nuclear, they didn't even know if nukes were actually going to function properly. They're like, this might...
I could challenge anyone in this room to explain to me, like, you know, exactly what MC squared means.
Did you know?
You can tell me, like, exactly.
We're kind of going all over the place.
You see my point. But like, no, but my point is, you.
Can I?
What you should not. What I was trying to claim to you is that they should not assume that the human race is going to understand things like Bitcoin or like the nature of the dollar or whatever. That's all I'm saying. And so I tend not to be an optimist from that perspective, and that's why I think there's a limit to the non-government currencies. People like the safety and security of their government currencies. They just do. So, and then that's going to stay the same for our perceivable lifetime, in my view. Just because of the way human beings behave. But yeah, Cheetah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, isn't E equals MC squared just the mass difference between your parent and the fission fragments times the speed of light squared?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, it's exactly what it means. See, Cheetah knows. No, but what I meant to say is like... Field,
so. I guess that kind of defeats the
purpose. That helps. Yeah.
I know. I was thinking about something else. We kind of went into three different directions in like 10 seconds. Sorry.
Yeah. The reason, but all I'm saying is that like when it comes to these, like all these new systems coming out, whether it's AI, whether it's cryptographic systems, whatever, most people just live on that abstracted layer. And they're not going to understand why their money is going up or down, why their purchasing power is getting affected. They might get a brief piece of the narrative or whatever. Like they may have understand one angle of it. Like most of us probably understand like one fraction of the information. But the reality is the totality of the information is impossible to sort of digest for most people. Nor do we have the time to digest all that either. So we're going to wind up living in a world where you have lots of different systems that just kind of come together. What role will, say, Bitcoin play? What role will privacy tokens play? Whatever. You know, I look at it this way. I keep it simple. Like, if a system is useful to you, then great, use it. Right? Like, you don't necessarily have to have it change the world. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it goes to infinity in terms of valuation, maybe it doesn't. Do you see use in it, and do you think other people will have usefulness of that thing?
Sorry, I didn't even make my first point. I was trying to say before was that I think people are going to start, like, once the original dollar goes away, you're going to see people really, really start to prioritize their purchasing power. And I think that anything that is, you know, like if they notice that they can't buy, maybe they won't even notice that they're talking about purchasing power at the beginning, but they'll start to notice like, hey, I can't buy as many things when I go to the store, right? When I go and buy all these different pieces of, you know, like but different
you
products.
You believe the outcome of what? Like, that was my question. Like, you, so
I think eventually. So like it'll be like you'll see people go to the store, try to buy a bunch of things, and then they realize that they can't buy as much, right? And they don't like that, right? And so they'll start to conflate that with inflation, which is the problem, which is the cause. Like either they won't, you know that at first, but they'll start to feel it because you start to see, you know, bigger and bigger numbers and less food in their bellies, right? And then so you start to make these associations in your mind. Then
and
the
you,
next
you could make like, the okay. argument that's a good thing because Americans are fat as fuck, by the way. That's
so
the
yeah, thing. It's like so it's like
so we have
I think,
too much purchase.
I think there's going to be a prioritization on, you know, actually having purchasing power for your money, right? Instead of just these inflationary systems, because if someone were to, like, imagine if everything collapses, right? Or imagine if things get really, really bad. If someone comes up to you with an inflationary currency, you're just going to tell them to screw off. Like, there's no way that anything like that is going to be valuable in the future.
I'm going to disagree with you here. Like, I just mentioned that like 70 to 80% of people have no fucking clue what you just said, even after you said it.
So like
meaning
nobody
like, meaning like this is not a group of people you're going to explain this to, and they're
I
mean, not
no no. But I was it. Saying like so like
now, the human
so,
race is mostly
but people
imbecile.
Understand what I'm trying to say though is that people understand feeling hungry, and they also understand when people are screaming about big numbers every day. You know
they
what I mean?
Do, but they don't create currency revolutions. As a result, they just eat less.
But you don't think that someone could ever come up with the ever associate one with the other? Because
no, human beings clearly have demonstrated in every country on every corner of the
okay,
planet.
Okay, I guess that's just where
they don't behave
that's
like right. you're mentioning. Like, yeah, if you're imagining a future where the sociology of human beings is different than what it is in this part of human evolution. So
well,
yeah, maybe 100
well,
million years now or so, or a million years.
I don't think 100 million years. I think we're actually all understanding things a little bit better, like every day. Like
you're incorrect. You're just incorrect.
You're just
I mean, I teach doctors.
You're just telling me
doctor,
incorrect. You're
doctor
not.
Level IQ.
You're giving me a reason why
we're talking about. Yeah, like I'm telling you, like you're overestimating human capacity, generally speaking.
In which exact regard, Sefi, just to clarify?
In which regard what?
In which regard he's overestimating the average human?
No, that it's this idea that somehow like you'll have a sort of monetary revolution where people will value like a more like they will value their currency and which currencies are available based on the like say tokenomics for example of the system
purchasing power
versus
just no understand
versus,
purchasing power.
No, they won't
because they'll go through the pain. They have to
no,
go through the
only,
pain first.
They only understand that pain when it happens all at once. So if you hyperinflate the currency to infinity and it dies, then they'll understand the pain immediately. But people forget those lessons pretty quickly. Like they really do. Like, I mean, how many countries have been through that lesson over and over and over again? It just happens repeatedly, right?
Oh, they just run for the green candles and the big piles, like always. This was
yeah. The only example of like really, really long-term currency stability we've had, probably the most stable currency we've had in this earth, is the dollar so far. And the reason is because it's powered by essentially a nuclear-powered hegemon of unprecedented scale, right? Like almost all the currency on float in the world is the dollar, like 90% of it. Like, you know, if all the assets are dollar denominated at this point. So that's the reason why we've had a period of relative global stability. If you break that, well, a lot of people die and like you might get a different system. But what will happen is human beings have demonstrated they'll just simply create the same thing again and again and again. There's no evidence that they're like, put it this way, money does not change human DNA. Like to evolve to where our brains are different and we behave and we care about different things could take millions of years for that to happen or hundreds of thousands of years at the very least.
Or some genetic engineering.
Or genetic engineering to make us think differently. That's a possibility as well, which those things are coming too.
If I was AI, I would do that, you know.
Yeah. So like, now, where we could have, that's why I was saying, if you had AI become the hegemon and you front run evolution big time and you have AI become our zookeeper, meaning like it's deciding what the monetary policy is, it's deciding how much inflation we need or don't need, it becomes a central bank, then yeah, you do have a system that no longer requires centralization. But now all human agency in the system is gone, and you now are living in the zookeeper world of the computer system, right? So the ability to, so it's always the funny paradox of Bitcoin is that on the one hand, you're giving your power to a machine to determine monetary policy. It is interesting that it's a fixed monetary policy, but on the other hand, you are giving up all human agency when it comes to it, which, you know, has its value, which has its purpose as a store of value. But do you want to do that to the entire monetary system? Maybe, maybe not. It depends. It depends. Like, so what would you do if you had a one world, you know, Bitcoin currency as an example? Would you have more wars or less wars? I'm not so sure. Because what happens if one country acquires more BTC than the other and you have no way to sort of destroy that their currency? Then war becomes different. War becomes a function of, you can't just do like the NSA, the CIA can't just go and like, you know, mess with like the details of a country. You have to exterminate that country if they see, they don't see eye to eye with you. So you create like these weird paradoxes where you think you're actually creating freedom, but you actually create more tyranny.
Well, I think that so we agreed earlier on, I think it's going to be a multi-chain future, right? So I think that you'll have different countries have their own different currencies, but these currencies will all communicate as like side chains, basically. You know?
Yeah.
And then they'll learn from each other and get better. And maybe there will be some that are inflationary and stuff, and that'll help bring in people, right, onto these systems. But once they're on the systems, then they'll realize, oh, I want the one that's actually like really hard to obtain. Because that's the one with the purchasing power.
What I do know is if you go back to video games, which is where a lot of, you know, cryptocurrency theory came from. If you go back to RuneScape and EverQuest and you go back to whatever, what you'll notice is every single video game MMO is an inflationary system. Why can't it be deflationary? Why can't the core money in that system become deflationary? So, for example, if you walk into, World of Warcraft, and you go to mine some gold, you go dig up some gold. Why can't like it get harder and harder to mine the gold as you go forward? Because the newbies don't want to play. Because if the people that got rich at the beginning in a deflationary currency basically rule the world, and the only people that can actually access the thing is by digging more, then what you create is essentially a slave state, and nobody wants to play that video game. And what you'll find is with each rollout of every expansion of World of Warcraft, what happens? Like last year's dragon drops from the mega guild battles become next year's yard trash that you get off the routine mobs that are like running around in the game, right? I don't know if you played any video games much, but like you'll notice this. If you don't do that, what happens is the new guys don't want to come and play because they know the people that have been playing before are always going to dominate the game. So the new expansions don't get any new users. And then there was already the problem of like existing guilds who are going to dominate the game anyway. So for the new person, it's really hard to sort of break in. But on top of it, so you have social hegemonic power, but you also have like then monetary hegemonic power if you wind up with a deflationary system. So the new guy always needs an inflationary currency. And if you'll notice in video games, they don't make it harder to mine the gold. Like you can make gold in infinite, right? Like if you play and you just keep, you know, however many players are in the system, you're mining gold. So this was the intuition that like led to the creation of BTC in the first place, was the mining effect of video games, in that like you can control the monetary policy of the video game and how much gold comes into the system. In the case of like proof of work, when it comes to say World of Warcraft, maybe you go and like, you know, you go to a mountain, you dig out rocks or whatever, and then you wind up getting some rocks, you get some gold out of it, whatever. You get the idea. Like there's no limit to how much you can produce. The more users that come in, the more money that gets created. Like that's the limiting factor. And then what they do is they create money sinks in the game. So it's like, well, let's create something that will use up all the money. Like if you want a level, you have to pay for it. Or maybe if you have to upgrade your equipment in Diablo or whatever, you have to pay for it. So that creates money sinks to make it so that you don't hyperinflate the coin value too much. But then they also have like the system of where the store of value objects, essentially your NFTs in that system, would be like your swords and shields you get from the big dragon event at the end of the season. They make those almost like the same shit you get from the yard trash in the next season, meaning like the lowest end creatures will give you those weapons. Why do they want to do that? Because they want to have the old people that got the top items a reason to play the next season, a whole new set of like amazing new shit. And the stats on the next season's shit are dramatically higher than the stuff that they had before. So they feel good about the fact that, you know, they're moving up in the world or whatever. And then the new people that come in feel like they can find the equipment just laying around that they can then play with the old, you know, whoever was there before. So with video games, it's like, it's clear that like, unless you want like nobody to show up and play your game and therefore like destroy the economy, like you have to have inflationary money. Like in a period, end of story, there is no universe in which you can have Bitcoin as a standard for the money. It's not possible. So BTC works great as a place to store some value. But is it going to be useful as the way that all people use money? The answer is no. And it just won't work that way. Like otherwise we'd be doing video games all the time. Name one video game with a deflationary currency. There are zero. Because it does not work. No new users.
So there may be the answer then is many different mediums of exchange.
Yep.
That as a side effect, they all have this store of value function as a thing. Because that if you are a medium of exchange, you are already a store of value. That's just kind of baked into it.
If you can get a network effect.
So you need lots of these things working together. And I think that's kind of where we're headed, basically. And I think that'll be our version of quote unquote inflation. You don't need to inflate one currency or the other. You could have all these things working together. Like that's where eventually we all kind of have that wake up moment where it's like, oh, wait a second. I didn't need to be destroying my currency and devaluing everything. We just needed to realize, okay, this one's kind of like, you know, pretty tapped out. And we're going to keep using it, but we're not going to use it. We're not going to use it to, like we're going to see investing very differently.
Yeah,
like we're going to realize, okay, cool. Like BTC is tapped out. That means we're going to move on to the next thing. Okay, yeah. BCH is tapped out. That means we're going to move on to the next thing.
Exactly.
And but then everyone's going to be using all these different things, and they'll all work. Pretty much. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what's happening. So what you notice is like each community that builds, you wind up with a bull run where like that thing will go from zero to $1 billion. It might drop to $100 million. And the next thing you know, it does another run. It does a whole another run. And so each community that is interesting enough to keep getting attention will create higher lows. Those that don't create that will create lower lows on each subsequent round. And so Dash, I described earlier before you came in, was an example of that. You're seeing lower lows on the bear market compared to previous, which is kind of concerning. So long as new users are coming in, there is the video game is basically being played as we speak every single day in crypto. And that is that like you'll notice the new coins that have like a 10x or 100x potential are attracting a certain group of people who are like, why would I go and buy BTC now? Where if I made a 5x, it'd be a miracle. But over here, I can make a 10x in a month or two or three. And so you see that casino being played every day. And then it's like, okay, if I get a 100x over here, maybe I'll buy the store of value token because now I can catch up. So as the token becomes more and more deflationary, what's interesting about BTC will be you'll have less and less people that are interested in it, not more. Because when the multiples go down, then you have to ride the price volatility and whatever benefits you might get from the thing, but you're not necessarily going to automatically get any kind of short-term ROI. So if BTC is going to go up in value, it's going to take ongoing years and years of people making money elsewhere and then maybe parking it as store of value in BTC. So it's an interesting thing, but like no question people prefer the video game of the 10x, the 100x. And this is the same thing that's true in actual video games. Like, so game theory plays a dramatic role in how all of this
works. Why they do stock halvings in a sense, right? Is like the unit bias that people get as the price gets too high.
It's not just unit bias, Phil. In stocks, the other thing is you don't have fractional stocks. So like if a new buyer doesn't have like $1,200 to buy then like they can more easily buy one share or two shares. It's not just unit buys. It's also just the purchasing ability of that thing.
Yeah. I grew up around Robinhood, so I forget that that it used to.
Yeah, rather than you can get back. Yep, exactly. So as whereas in the traditional stock market, you can't do that.
Yeah, I still think it would help with Bitcoin. They would never go for this, but if we literally said like, okay, everyone with Bitcoin, you're going to get four times as much Bitcoin and we're going to divide the price. Like, just chill out, because everyone will buy it if we just lower the dollar value. It's like, it really like would change it.
Yeah, like, or just like talk about it in sats or something.
You know? Yeah, I mean, like people that come into the space, they're like, okay, this thing is $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, and this thing is $5. So like, obviously they're going to get the $5 thing like every time.
But you're not going to teach people this. It's the unit bias is real, because like I said, 70% of human beings, like, they're like, what? You know, they have no idea what you're even talking about. They're like, why is it so expensive? I don't understand what it is.
Yeah. That's why, like, I think if you just lowered the price, you would have to give people more Bitcoin, but you know, they would never do this, but it would be interesting.
Yeah. And I think the there's also a general danger in BTC in that, like, we don't know for sure that A, we know it's not scalable. We've had that problem already. And B, we don't know that, like, it's going to continue to have the same adoption curve 10 years from now as it does now. Because its adoption curve slowed down a lot. If you look at price action, it is not demonstrating viral mechanics anymore, by the way. It broke down on all log charts. So it's not in good shape, in my opinion. Like, ETF or otherwise, like, maybe you get a gigantic mega pump from it, maybe. But like, the adoption curve looks terrible for the fucking thing. That's just fact. Like, even
it
if
probably you go, has to do with the difficulty of mining, right? Like, I mean, I don't know how exactly they measure adoption curve, but it's getting more and more difficult. It's pretty much like a corporate, like an industrial thing at this point, depending on where you live.
It's not just the mining effect that is harder for new entrants to come into, but also the, what was I going to say? There's another like key point I was trying to, I'll remember in a minute. But yeah, the other one was like, I pulled up Google Trends, right? Like, yesterday, I think I went through Google Trends of different things and talking about how many people are searching for the word Bitcoin. And the search hits for Bitcoin peaked in like the end of the 2017 bull run. Even in this last bull run, you had less Google search hits for BTC. Now, you could argue that maybe less people are using Google or some other BS like that, but that includes...
I am genuinely curious about that.
That includes YouTube searches, right? So that's a lot. Really? The reality is, and not only that, but YouTube and the internet and everything are much bigger now than they were in 2017. So the total number of users online that could search Bitcoin has increased dramatically since 2017. So the fact that you have less search hits tells me that we're there at some level, Bitcoin is semi-fucked. It has not maintained virality. It has not maintained sort of like the same sort of like adoption curve as the internet or smartphones did so far. So that's concerning.
But if you talk to Maxis, then we're just still that early, because no one's searching for it yet, because you know it's going to get so crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean that could be true.
They could be right. We'll see, but I don't know. I question.
It's possible, but like, why would you have more search hits in 2017 then?
So what'll be a good test?
It doesn't fit that story, but well,
yeah. This runs a little different because we dipped below like the all-time high before, but otherwise it would be a good metric to see like, okay, when we do, if we do hit 69,000, like how does that compare to when we broke 20,000 or whatever, you know, in the last run? That would be a
right
metric.
But like the last run, BTC didn't have as much search hits as 2017 did, which is interesting. Like at the top, max search hits. And now it could also be argued that like a lot more people feel like they know what it is, so they don't search for it anymore. That's a possibility, or who knows? There are many reasons why that, but you know, are we actually seeing more individual users, holding BTC for whatever reason? Maybe, I don't know. We'll have to see how that plays. But also, there's this the ROI bias too. By the way, it's not just the unit bias; it's the idea that, like, well, hold up a second. If I buy, this stock over here, I might get a 5x. If I get BTC over here, I might get a 5x, but I might get much quicker with this company over here. So from a, like, you know, and I know that like most people didn't buy BTC because of some cypherpunk revolution. They bought it because number go up, right? Like most of the people in each of the bull markets, like 95% or more, buy it because they believe it's an investment that's going to go up. If it doesn't go up, they're not buying it just to store value there. like 95% of people are not using it for this purpose. I would guess probably the number is higher than that. But I like as far as actual numbers of people, not the amount of money in BTC, the true, like the absolute number of human beings like that are using it for that purpose is probably relatively small still. And yeah. And then like, so you're in a race against that plus scalability plus quantum and everything else coming. And time flies quickly, guys. Like, you know, it'll be 10 years from now and you'll be like, wait, where'd the time go? You know how this goes. So with all these new technologies emerging, yeah, the last bull run, the top for BTC has made me very nervous. I'm like, uh-oh, it's no longer like, it's not no longer growing on a viral growth path in terms of like price action. And price action definitely has a, like, you know, if you're not growing on log scale anymore, right, that means that your growth has been curtailed quite a lot. It just does. I mean, like it's like a virus in a petri dish, or I'm sorry, a bacteria in a petri dish that keeps dividing, you get exponential and it devours all the world's money in no time, right? That has not happened. It's the acceleration has gone down substantially. You could make arguments like maybe the reason why that is because like on paper, the 2017 valuation of BTC was just like a silly, you know, run up on a relatively illiquid market. And therefore, like, should be looked at as an anomaly on the curve. Maybe that's the right way to look at it. That, you know, because like price discovery and what prices actually are versus like, you know, it's not the same as measuring bacteria in a petri dish where you can actually count them all. What you're doing here is you're like, you have this weird price discovery mechanism that maybe does not measure what we're trying to measure correctly.
There's also one thing that I was always looking at, and it's basically the fees for transactions, the V sets per V byte, right? And since the ordinals came out, they just raised the whole floor. So transactions are pretty lucrative right now for miners. And it's like a subsidy for them to kind of get away with the low price. But who knows, with the next halving, I think there will be a lot of belly ups if the price isn't consistent.
But it also, slows down the system a lot too, right?
Yeah, well, the priority transactions still go through. And there's weird shit happening, like Binance Pool. They actually, if they get a block through, it's not like the template. They just mine their own shit, their transactions that they want to go through, like the withdrawals from their platform and whatnot, right? So it's like super weird how they actually layer the transactions. It's like the one full address.
And this is why they can't censor ordinals, right? Is because they can always have a friendly node operator that will process their transactions. That's what I understand.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure like what the game theoretic is
for going on there.
How this plays out for the network.
I really like how much light it brings to the mentality of like the maxis. Like the whole sentiment of trying to censor certain transactions because you think like you know better what a permissionless network should be used for the world is pretty ironic to me.
Yeah, it's an interesting like maxi phenomenon. Like it's a it is a centralization phenomenon, which is interesting. Like
yeah, like, and they also just get kind of ahead of themselves in terms of ego. Like, in my opinion, they think they know so much better what the world wants. It's like, no, if you have millions of people willing to pay for this, that's what they want. It's pretty much that simple.
Yeah, you're gonna decide what you want with your wallet.
Yeah.
And one thing that human beings have demonstrated clearly is, like, that nobody knows, like, what, like, even in any given country, you have different groups of people that advocate for different monetary policy or even just, like, capitalism versus socialism, all the different isms, right? So like people don't even agree like on a general scale what is preferable. And they certainly don't like the idea of something forced on them. Like it doesn't matter which group you are. If you have the opposite ism forced upon you, you don't like it. So right. I think having a wide variety of shit you can play in is better than one thing more than likely.
But that is part of what's going on, right? Is the change because it showed up and their you know beloved monolith network just got changed basically. Like fees went up and the dynamics changed, so they're like freaking out. If anything, it just shows that it's kind of broken in the first place. Like if that many more people using it makes it that unaffordable and slow, like there's a problem.
Like, the thing is, too, is you can actually scale BTC in two ways. And I'll say the first one because it's just less, you know, annoying. Basically, you wrap everything, right? So all these different chains around it can start wrapping BTC, and then there you go. Like, side chains are fantastic for that. I guess some people think of them as different layers or whatever, but we all kind of hold hands and help BTC thrive. The other thing is you increase the block size. So a Lightning developer said this recently, and they actually said, look, we need 100 megabyte blocks. Like, we need 100 megabyte blocks. And then for some reason, that Lightning developer was just ignored. And he's not the only Lightning developer that said this now. It's been like probably at least a dozen of different developers in the Lightning and BTC world. And yeah, it's kind of just a weird one, because I guess it's miners that are making a lot of money.
Over 50% consensus is not hard to get to. So the problem is like, yeah, how do you even get there? Maybe you don't.
Is it 50%? Is that all that they require? Oh, gosh.
Well, I mean, ultimately, because it's the same as a 51% attack, right? Any kind of 51% is required. And then everything else that doesn't convert is a fork at that point. Any miner that doesn't mine the new software is basically a fork automatically.
Yeah, but that's okay in Bitcoin. That's the weird thing. It's not like proof of stake. Like, I don't even understand it all that well. Like, you can have forks and you can have people running on different forks of the chain.
You'll just have two different,
consensus, you know?
Yeah, you'll wind up with like whatever Bitcoin was as of yesterday. And then like, if four of us decide to take our mining and then go on a different software, you know, it's upgrade to 0.001 or whatever. And then now you and me are on a different network, and that's the fork, but the previous network still runs just fine.
Right.
Get the entire thing to consensus. If you don't get, you'd have to have like the preponderance of the network go to the new upgrade. If they don't, then what happens is you have like two, let's say like 50% went to this way and 50% that went that way. Now you have two different Bitcoins essentially. It depends on your perspective then.
Right. I guess that's the difference between a soft and a hard fork too. Because like, as I understand in Bitcoin, like, there are different people running different versions of the consensus software or whatever on their miners. Like, if they haven't updated or whatever, and you're still working with Bitcoin, but there are like slight tweaks. And then there's like a hard fork where it entirely changes.
Yeah. Like for example, Zephyr, I mean, sorry. Like, if you look at Monero, Zephyr is not a fork of Monero. It's used the same Monero code, but then started a new thing. Versus if you, let's say half the Monero people revolted and said, we want to make Zephyr. And they use the existing Monero to do it, but they just upgraded the software. That would be a, you know, fork of the Monero chain essentially, because the price history of XMR would be included in the future of the previous transactions or blocks would actually be included in that new chain, right? That's the difference. Whereas when you created Zephyr, you create a brand new like XMR fork. It uses the same protocol, it uses the same software and rigs and whatever else, but it's basically a completely new thing.
Kind of a weird day for Luna to be going up on another note.
Oh, what's it doing today?
It's just kind of up, like it's bouncing when everything's flat and it's kind of in the middle of, you know, decay. Supposedly getting extradited and stuff. So I'm curious if it's like an insider pump or if it's just random. Could just be weird pricing
here.
But it's been pretty much down since, like, it's been like kind of down since the bad news, you know, pretty bad, and it popped today, which is really weird timing.
Luna's a tricky one to draw fibs on, because like the you know, I mean, we had a $7.66 pump at one point when it first came out, and then like it bottomed at like 36 cents. If you use those markers for the, then $1.16 is where we're talking about, and that's about where we are now.
Right.
So for the one of the levels, but anyway, yeah, it's a tricky thing to, you can't really draw any conclusions on Luna. You know, there's going to be a bunch of people that are going to pump it though, because you have a gigantic community that, like, once it goes to a certain level and they're like, ooh, my bag's actually worth something again, then those people are going to be like very vested with the idea of like pumping the story of Luna.
Oh yeah, the redemption arc could be real. Like as soon as
it will be real.
Enough price left that people can come back and feel confident and not like embarrassed about what they did, it'll be such a big moment.
So long as we have bull market vibes and money's flowing into the system, Luna's going to pump. Yeah, there's almost no doubt in my mind about it. Plus, they're doing stuff, right? They're incentivizing stuff on Astroport and this and that, and then there's like new stuff being built and.
Yeah, they're doing a lot. I don't feel like they have like a clear vision, but that's like the state of DeFi. Like no one does. So I respect them for trying to have a vision even.
And they're cool funded, unlike a lot of other projects.
Right. Yeah,
that's
yeah, they're super
thing.
Funded. Yeah, although I wonder if they should save some of that for a little kickback to the SEC at some point.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. I'm sure TFL has, a stash to pay things like some sort of fine or whatever.
Yeah, they must.
Not sure how that works.
Because I wouldn't be surprised if that's like the final resolution to this, is a settlement for TFL and, Don't want to say the other part.
I'm not sure. But you can imagine, though, like if people's vested Lunas are going up in value and, and like the chain is improving and stuff, then I think once you get like if you get Lunas, price back up above like let's say $10, like a lot of people that were in the original ecosystem that were that got snapshotted, like they're starting to become more whole again in a sense, because a lot of people got in sub $20, right?
Yeah.
So it starts becoming like a significant amount. And as that occurs, like other things happen too, because we got really good wallets and the infrastructure works really smoothly. Then you have the possibility that someone wants to then take that build on the ecosystem because there's liquidity now, right? So most of these dApps and whatever, they don't want to build somewhere there's like a ghost chain or something. They want to build where the money's showing up. And then the core currency of that ecosystem, like Luna, for example, is up in value. Because then the people have somewhere to spend that Luna and do something on that chain. So then you start getting all sorts of, dApp games, basically. I call them games.
That's right. I think
most dApps are shit coins, right? So
I think that's why they injected all that liquidity against like majors. Like they put like Doge on a DEX and Bitcoin and ETH and blah, blah, blah. Like all the
something features. Something you can actually play with,
Yeah, and something you can swap into, that kind of like anchors the price of Luna. Like if, even if Luna's like dogging and not doing well, if the whole market's moving up and you have like all the majors as major LP, it'll just drag it up too,
Right. Another thing too is if like, Doge and whatever else these things pump, then the TVL within those ecosystems looks much bigger, right? So it's like a better advertising tool. So a lot of times the DeFi chains are measured on DeFi Llama or whatever based on how much TVL is present. And
oh yeah, that's a good point.
So like you want some coins on the system that people want to play with and that will pump, derivatives and stuff like that. It's just common. Like it's just a lot of fun. I guess Luna popped up a little bit. Nothing extreme.
No, it was just down significantly from the news on the extradition and stuff.
Zephyr's right at like 23.7 now. It's pretty good.
Looks like it might hit my original 21 order that I moved up.
Pain. So I got too much at 27.
That's where I got more too.
Yeah, I think, a lot of the thesis here relies upon like for microcaps, it like to get beyond the first pump, it relies upon like just ongoing continuation of bull market, basically, right? If you go bullish for the next like 6 months, then most of the microcap things are I don't know what's considered microcap, but 500 million and below, you'll have another run up, I think, of those things. Like Kuji is another example of that. Fetch is another example.
What do you think of Boot Bostrom? I don't know anything about it. I just noticed it's a smaller AI coin in Cosmos.
It's been sitting around for a while, though. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how I didn't even know about it. I was unaware of this one. So I'm not like excited or anything, but I picked a little up just in case there's an AI run.
And I don't know what it does exactly.
Yeah, I don't think it matters with AI coins. I don't think any of them do anything.
You got like a tiny bag just to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, so there's like a few people that are smarter than me that say there'll be like an AI coin run, and I don't really own any except for Fetch, so figured I'd get another.
It's not to say that it wouldn't run. I don't know. Like, Cosmos liquidity for some of those smaller chains is pretty dubious.
Oh, I'm sure it's dismal on this one.
So I don't know, unless it's like on a centralized exchange.
I think there was an airdrop that I'm actually looking to see if it's still claimable. I'll let you know if it is. I very rarely get them, I find. I'm always excited. And I'm like, oh, for whatever reason, I didn't qualify for that one.
Yeah, I'm like, Coogee's put in a pretty good, has a pretty good chart right now.
Coogee looks great right now. It's also like doing a consolidation upwards when everything else is kind of looking flat and down.
Classic, it's got a classic sort of bull flag, basically.
Yeah, yeah, it looks really good. And it's also, we're just on the end of that. I don't think he's quite done, but that whale seller like got through most of his bag, and he might just be keeping the rest. It's possible he's not a complete idiot.
Yeah, I mean, it's got like a volume floor. The highest volume location for Coogee is about 350 range, and that's exactly where we are now. So right now for this sort of like consolidation, $3.50 is the high volume location.
Yeah.
If it sort of hangs around there for a while, I think you could head up. It really depends, I think, how the market looks like 3 months from now. But like, does Coogee run up to like 10, 15 bucks?
I think if they execute a good perps product, that'll be big. I don't know. That's a tall order, so I'm curious to see it. I do have faith that they're capable, but I don't know how like the speed of a chain in Cosmos and of most of them can do perps very well. So we'll see.
I think Say did a fair amount of upgrades to make their chain fast.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so like, Coogee doing it, I'm curious about, because their block times are 3 seconds or whatever, right? So that's what I'm wondering, because that's their next big product is perps. And I don't think they would like put out a bad product, so I'm sure they have something in mind.
Yeah, I don't know like the level of technical expertise of those guys regarding those. But I guess a lot of those types of platforms maybe just copy paste from different code that's already been produced.
Yeah, I think so. I think most of them have the same block time in Cosmos until recently when, you know, attention on faster blocks came around. I think that carves Say out though to be a place in a Cosmos portfolio just for that reason.
What's your sell level for Coogee?
I think I would start taking a little at 10, but I'm holding Coogee for a long time. Just because it has, you know, it has the low inflation, and it really performed like pretty well through the bear. Like it didn't go up very much, but it wasn't going down. You know, like same reason, because it has no inflation. So I'm pretty bullish on Coogee. I don't think I'll sell very much till it really makes me want to sell it. The airdrops are also like pretty juicy so far. I didn't actually like have much staked, so I'm just like seeing other people's numbers, but now I'm a little better off, so we'll see.
Yeah, like just, you know, I use sort of like Chainlink as this kind of canary in the coal mine, and so it like on its chart, basically what it did was so there was a fib level right at 1590 or so, and we had like all sorts of, you know, trading activity happening right there. And it feels like every time that gets passed, you get like some people throwing on leverage, because you get little pumps like to 1720, and then it you know, got rejected at the same level again, but these same folks are getting liquidated. But now the price has not dropped below the support now. So it's like at 1580 might be becoming kind of this, or 1590, the support level, hopefully. If that starts to climb, I think that sends a signal to the market too, that like, because it started the market out, right? So it's cyclically, it is like kind of in the altcoin space, it pumped first, so to speak. So if it starts to make a move, then each next thing starts to go with it, I think. It's because like people tend to cycle these things too. Like they might take profit from one and then pump the next thing, and then the next thing. And I think that may be partly why this happens. Because like these large market cap ones, you don't, like if you have a large bag and a large market cap and it makes a move, you know, you might feel pretty comfortable with taking a little piece of that and throwing it at some micro cap and stuff like that. So I think the money flows down the market caps to some extent. But this year, I think like a lot of the micros got kicked up pretty quick. Yeah, I'm hoping like my Eagle Pops finishes making a move to like $100 and then I can just swap that to Zeph. And I'm hoping Zeph doesn't start like taking off before that happens. I shouldn't say that now because everyone's going to front run me, but like whatever. That's kind of my play right now. So I've got it sitting there ready to get some, but I was kind of hoping that today maybe that you got like a really big pop on Eagled. We'll see how that goes. Yeah, if anything, Eagle just started taking off because it broke out from 50 and went only to 63.75.
I've always faded that coin for some reason. Like, I've always wanted to buy it, and I've just, like, not done it knowing that I would regret it, but I never really cared.
Yeah, it's an interesting little thing. It's a like, couple of brothers. All of them. Benjamin Mikchu, or Mik, whatever his name is, and his brother. Like, one brother is, like, the tech nerd, and the other one's, like, the guy that stands on stage and looks good. And they're from where? Like Romania or something. I don't remember where. Some one of those countries in the Southeast Europe. I don't really know. It's a functioning sharding chain, so I guess they got their tech working fine.
I question the name change. I do not, you know, maybe they had a motive. It's not like I know better than them, but Multiverse X does not catch me.
Yeah. It's kind of
sounds like a super generic like app that's already like decommissioned from 2021 or something.
Yeah, they went. I don't know. You're right. Like this multiverse angle was sort of like the hype thing back at that moment, and everyone's like, everything's going multiverse, and I think they got euphoric about that. I don't know if they're what multiverse products they're trying to produce in this chain. They're trying to bill it as like, you know, a base layer multiverse chain of some kind and whatever. I don't know what's.
That's the question about multiverse, right? It's like a lot of people say we're actually really far off because like the multiverse has to be integrated. It can't be like siloed. Like that's like a fake multiverse.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I don't know.
The multiverse won't happen until it's one platform.
I think by then, like AI is going to be creating multiverses and you know, and because AIs can create APIs and stuff on the fly, like between one place to the other.
I don't think people will do this. It's like too big a task, right?
Traditional tunnels that we think of like in software, like, okay, I'm on Adobe. I need to port my shit over to Microsoft or whatever. That type of thing, like AI is going to make mincemeat out of essentially. So I think human beings will be like increasingly in digital spaces that you don't really know what the primary platform actually is. Like you're just sort of like floating around and shit. I don't know, but like.
It's like IBC for gaming. Like it'll all just be connected.
Yeah. And anyway, metaverse is like kind of like layers anyway, you know, theoretically existing blockchains and people playing on the internet already is one layer of metaverse. I think what people mean is that, oh, I'm going to take my video game tokens from one video game to the next or.
Yeah, they mean like interoperable.
Yeah. Or like that. What's that? The Ready Player One idea that you're all playing in some like.
Okay.
Space that's like digital in some way and part of it's like a visual representation of it and all this stuff, but I think the visual representation is just to get the dimwits excited. You really don't, all you need is just blockchains and you're already in a metaverse. Like what do you mean, right? You're like, we're putting our real money into our little favorite internet coins here.
We're already doing it and I'm pretty much trading with like someone across the world when I like, you know, swap potentially.
Exactly. You're doing all sorts of things, trading with all people all over the planet already, just playing this video game. The attaching graphics or VR to it is kind of whatever, in my opinion. It's like, it's kind of.
I do think AR could be really, really silly and fun. You know, like imagine Pokemon Go, if you can like actually like, you know, catch the fucking Pokemon, that could be pretty cool.
Yeah, the Pokemon Go metaverse. And not only that, but like the world where you like are going to simply just use like a video game asset in different games, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, so you have like gold in Fallout and you're going to go to Skyrim and use this gold? Like,
right.
What are you talking about?
You could do it with like conversion rates, but like what would it be based on, right? Like you don't have any real value to go on besides your game items. Yeah. So. Unless you actually created, you could create the item economy, and that's like what I think a smart game will do. is like just create your like item economy outside of the game with you know, a crypto or whatever.
But like, you're going to bring your sword and shield into your Call of Duty game? I don't know. It's like the whole thing is like,
yeah.
Like,
I mean, they had like marketplaces for WoW items and Diablo items and stuff.
Oh yeah. You know? But like the fungibility of like shit in different game worlds makes no sense to me. Yeah. Like the fungible part is you, the player, honestly. Like if you look at Ready Player One, it's like you might go to the racing game or you might go to the whatever game, but like it's you that's fungible, not the race car.
Right.
Not the graphical representation of your sword or the data interpretation, like the interpretation of your gold, your digital gold, which, you know, like probably has different valuations if you're on a starship versus if you're on like, I don't know, a farm in Skyrim or something. Like, no, that makes
it would be sense. Interesting, like the conversion rate depending on the popularity of your game, you know, like your gold from a crappy game going to Skyrim would probably be just worthless because like no one cares about the items on that game.
I mean, the only thing I could think of that like would tie it all together would be is if all of the players in all the different games are indirectly mining a coin that might be deflation,
like a real coin. Yeah,
so like all the players are like doing different activities and that activity results in this kind of like proof of work, and that proof of work in the background is creating a base layer you know, gaming currency or something.
That would be really cool to have maybe a proof of like a game based on like a fun like proof of work model that, you know, it would take a lot of math to like work this out, and I'm sure it would hyperinflate like all the rest, but it would still be cool. Like if you could actually go mine and like produce like some internet coins like with your mining character.
Yeah, well, what happened with Bitcoin is they just removed the video game out of it.
Right, yeah.
Like the proof of work is simply
that shit done in the real world.
Yeah, the entire game theoretic, you know, the human got taken out of the picture, except for the fact that you either mine or use the coin. But it's right. Not like the proof of work doesn't require you to be on a treadmill, for example. Like it's not a human work that's being
although
measured.
You could rig up a treadmill to mine Bitcoin, you know.
That's true. That's true. You can, but like
I'm sure
they made it not necessary. Is my point.
Yeah, no, I know.
So if you were like, if you're playing a video game and the actions in the game somehow were proof of humanity, proof of work type conglomeration, then maybe you could have a.
Yeah, they would have to like produce real value somehow or something. That would be the tough part, right?
Yeah, or maybe like the activity of playing in these different games, different achievements and shit, unlock some of your. You know, so while you're doing the general work, it produces the actual coin, but when you hit certain achievements, it gives you the coin. And so therefore, like now you have a cross chain or cross video game sort of like reference coin. But the thing about video games is you don't go into video games just to go work. You go into video games to start fresh and you want to do the progression. So if you just went from like the Skyrim game and you got your elite money and now you're rich and then now you can go buy a bunch of shit in the Fallout game and like get all the cool shit with your money, it just ruins the game.
That's what Warcraft really captured. World of Warcraft like made it a full-time job really successfully. Like you mm-hmm. rarely developed multiple characters because you had to like work all day for your like main character to like keep it, you know, maxed out. It was really well done.
Oh, that's an interesting point, because a lot of people in EverQuest used to like multi-box their characters. They'd have like three at once so that they can like level faster and like do quests and shit and camp items and stuff. Is that not a major thing in World of Warcraft?
I don't know if you could multi-box. I never tried.
I suppose you could in anything. It's just a matter of how
much. Yeah, I mean, you could Ghost Mouse. That's what I did. Ghost Mouse was awesome. You could just like record a mouse script that clicked all your buttons for you and like ran your character around, and it was totally third party.
Interesting. What kind of shit did you do in Ghost Mousing? That's interesting.
You could just like mine. Math you could mine gold, or you could the annoying thing you could do is like join the PvP stuff and just like stop your character from going AFK the whole time to get points. But that was kind of messed up to do.
Oh, interesting.
You could like, you know, whatever was not too complicated to like click through the keystrokes, you could do with the Ghost Mouse.
So with Ghost Mouse, you'd like go mine gold. You take or go mine rocks and go to the marketplace, sell them. Like you would
that would then be pretty complicated to like move through areas, because you would have to literally like click through the whole movement pattern. Like, I don't know, I guess you could do it if you spent enough time. You would have to have the order of operations correct, like each repetition of the sequence for it to like repeat. It would get like pretty complicated, but you could stuff like you could like run over there, kill a few monsters, and like do something else and then repeat.
Or something. Yeah. It'd be interesting. Yeah. Because right. You'd have to have like anti-ghost mousing protocols, essentially, the way that
they started to. Yeah. They never could because it was totally third party. So they could just figure out like if your character repeated too much, like, you know,
yeah, or they'll randomize certain things, like,
right,
that make it so that you can't go to the same rock to mine the same gold. You'd have to go somewhere else or something.
You know, that's probably why they actually did that initially, because that did happen in that game.
That's like random X, like, you know, the code being modified to be ASIC resistant, for example. Same basic idea, right?
It's like, what about is on-chain randomness actually like a valuable thing? Like this, there's that noise coin that dropped recently, and I don't know, a lot of people compare it like it's important.
It's important. It's really important, particularly for designing any kind of games that rely upon randomness, such as gambling or video games. So to where you can be sure that the game is not rigged. So on-chain randomness does help, but is that going to mean that coin's going to go up in value? That's a whole nother story. Like, it depends.
Yeah.
These kind of like narratives, like on-chain randomness, like, who knows what that
that's
means?
That's exactly what I'm thinking. Is like, what do you use it for, and why would it?
Yeah, it's the high IQ sort of like, you know, right, play that you're going to buy this thing thinking someone else is going to care because you care, and the reality is nobody else cares, and right, like that kind of thing.
It's like, story of my life.
It's a story, right? Well, it's the privacy narrative. Same story, right? Like, yeah, back to topic. The reality is like everyone needs it, but like if you ever ask anyone, like, oh, to what privacy coin did you buy? They don't have any. So, because they mainly want a number to go up, right?
And because they're scared of the government, which is fair.
I don't think it's that. I think really it's just people just don't even know. Like, people have no idea what it is. Like, you know, like, oh, that chain's privacy. Oh, what's Monero? I don't know. Right. The reality is the vast majority of people just don't know what it is. And B, even if they did know what it is, they're not sure that number is going to go up. And so it's just not in their radar. So, yeah, privacy definitely catches a lower bid in terms of overall, like the overall attention.
A lot of bigger influencers also like won't touch them. They publicly like say like I don't do privacy coins because of the risk, you know. So there's a constituency of the market that just avoids them because they're worried about like regulatory risk and stuff.
Yeah, but it doesn't hurt you specifically.
No,
like it just hurts the listings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Let's see who's posting what here. Everyone's posting a little bit of Zeph stuff, so that's good. This new guy, Crypto Bullet, has like 136,000 followers and started posting about it, I think, today, I think. Or has he been posting on it before? I'm not sure. You probably only need like one more sort of influencer type to show up, and next thing you know, it pops.
Yeah, you would think it would level up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think one more level up, you know, one more 10x from here, and like you get to that market cap. I think it's sustainable at that point because the visibility increases dramatically, you know, on the market caps and stuff. And then as that happens, and then if you also get a listing or so, that pretty much does a trick for everybody in here now. I think, that's the beauty of like being really, really early. You don't have to worry about like miracles being performed. You just have to like get some basic level of engagement and growth. And then if it goes up beyond that, you know, Yahoo, awesome. But like, if it doesn't, you're still doing really well. So what do you care, right? That's kind of the basic, like, premise here. Like, a 10x from here is actually rational. Whereas, like, say, for example, a 10x at BTC, it's like, fuck, how long do you have to wait for that? Who knows? Right? Like, that could be a long time.
How much is your altcoin going to go up if BTC goes up 10x?
Oh yeah, there's that too, right?
I mean, depending on the fashion it does it in, I guess that would depend on, you know, how it happens.
The smaller the market cap you go to is like the bigger the leveraged bet on BTC, basically.
Yeah, in both directions, importantly.
Yeah, and I think it's more like fun to go to a micro cap to take a leveraged bet versus going to a centralized exchange and taking a bet on a routine coin. Right.
Yeah, I think it's actually like a similar risk profile too. If you just downsize and go way out the risk.
Exactly.
That's my logic, is like I can put $100 or $500 on something that's like got relatively high risk, or I can put like $50 on something that's just super fucking high risk. And if it does succeed, it'll make it all up.
Exactly. So it's like, especially if you're early in the market and you're not already in the FOMO market already, which we're clearly not.
Right.
Yeah. Looking at all the Google trends, we've just started to pick up. I mean, just barely. So certainly not. Like, I think in Twitter, you can get the sense that you can get the wrong sense. On the one hand, if it's really, really busy, you can get the sense, oh man, we're in a super cycle, right? Like, you know, it's too frothy. On the other hand, you can get to the sense too that like, maybe we're like in a sense of disbelief as well, because you'll have people saying, oh, it's too frothy. But you're like, wait, it's like, it's been a 2-year bear market.
That's exactly what you're talking about. I'm so like, it's too frothy, right?
So obviously everyone's trying to pump their bag and they're trying to talk about their coin and everything else. And that's normal. That's going to happen. But like, to say that it's too frothy at this stage, like not according to Google Trends or anything. So that's kind of, to me, the disbelief type person who's like, ooh, this is too frothy. Whereas in fact, with what it is, just the beginning of a run up possibly.
I think it's a bit of like how people keep themselves in check. Like I do the same thing. I'm like it's how I like control my emotions, to just constantly tell myself things like that. So I think that's part of it, is people are literally just trying to talk themselves down, you know, like it's too frothy. Like we should probably take profits, probably think about taking profits, right guys?
But that also means that like that's room for more continuation too.
Exactly. Yeah.
If the more people are thinking like that, that
if,
means
if everyone is sidelining their money, like that's when you go up.
Exactly. They haven't blown their wad yet, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Max Payne right now is like all the experienced traders and like experienced people are like taking chips off the table, because obviously you probably should be. So if we go up a little higher, I think it'd be pretty funny.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, the same way I'm thinking of e-gold, I'm like, I held it like under $50 for, you know, a year and a half. And if it goes to $100 or whatever, I'm going to, you know, consider selling this thing. Whereas, you know, maybe the right choice is just leave the fucking thing alone. Right. And it just pumps with everything else. And just that, you know, why do you want to take like another tax hit or some bullshit on it?
And a lot of times you look back at things you sold and you're like, holy crap, that was a big mistake. Like, like when I look back at like some 2021 stuff, like it's pretty crazy. Like even though I was in profit, like how much higher stuff went, but you know, it's always good to take.
Or even now they're in higher lows or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Even now, like I was tempted to take profits like at, you know, 39 or 38 on Bitcoin. I'm like, this is way higher than I thought we could go. So I'm just along for the ride at this point.
Yeah, like, and we have like what, maybe 50 people in here. Let's see how many like other spaces are going right now. See how many you have on your timeline up at the top here. You have one with like 5 people. You have Rack doing one with like 4.
Sundays are usually pretty empty.
So it's like, yeah, not very many things are running very hard right now as far as like spaces. You have one, Age of Zalmas, Owls and Sovereign Shards. Oh, Multiverse X is finally doing one. Oh, see how it works? Like the price pumps. Everyone's like, oh my God, it's alive. Like, let's go see what's happening.
It is like all the projects you assumed were dead. And then the price goes up and you're like, oh my God, I guess they're still developing.
In fact, I should probably go over there now and like see like what's happening. And like, because I'm questioning whether I should keep my bag or like, you know, like sell the pop at some point, or whether it's like they really do have a lot of cool shit coming and I haven't done any research. So maybe I should go over there and listen for a little bit. But yeah, it's definitely not frothy, because like we only have like, I mean, this is the biggest space on my list and we're just 50 people here just chilling out. When the market gets really hot, I mean, shit, there's like 200 people, 300 people.
There were like a few days when it really shot up to 40, like it got kind of crazy on Twitter, and now it's already calmed down. There's like less people.
Yeah. Yeah. People, it's gone sideways for just long enough. Right. So it's like, everyone's
it takes like
down.
2 days and they're like, well, I'm bored.
Yep. Exactly. Everyone wants to feel something with that big pump, and then everyone just gets, you know, the space gets filled up big time. Yeah. No matter how much you tell people, you really have to like kind of keep the spaces or anything else going at high numbers, because high numbers attracts lots of new people. They just see the numbers on the thing and they're like, oh, what are they talking about? Let's go do it. But everyone gets like tired after a while and they're like, oh, whatever. So it's like human nature for sure to just want to have a party. Like when it's hot, that's when people want to really, really have a party. And then they'll call like when the price is dipping, it's called like the coping spaces. You know, it's like, oh, they're just showing up to kind of pump their bags because they're bag holders or whatever, which is basically true. But I mean, what else is new? But like, but you get a sense of like when it pops, how many people show up, like how many people actually really did buy the dip, because then they're really, really excited when it goes up. So it's funny stuff. Anyway, actually, I think I need to get some lunch anyway. So I was going to just, I'll probably listen to that multiverse thing and then eat something here. But yeah.
Can you send a link to the space?
Oh, here, let me just retweet the thing or something. Yeah, see what they're talking about.
It's not tweet, it's posting.
They're going to love you when 50 people jump in there all of a sudden, right? With you.
Okay, I posted it. And then we can, just check that out. Let's see what they're talking about. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom over impossible loss. It's all moss and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary fall. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner laced, acting non-toxic just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like this shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few seats, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, say and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Terror Spaces.